Welcome into your Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Brennis, joined tonight by Ray Kuhn. How are you doing, Ray?
I'm good. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing good. Have you been getting to watch the Olympics at all, Ray?
Yeah, a little bit. Watch some cold weather sports while I'm stuck in cold weather, wishing for the warm weather of baseball season.
Yeah, I'm also. I mean, tonight I'm real excited. We're going to be talking about some curling and some skateboarding, snowboarding, whatever. You know, whatever
no matter what,
the Olympics. That's what we're talking about tonight in the podcast. So,
well, no matter what it is with curling, I still don't understand it, but it hooks me in every time.
Apparently, there's a power play in curling.
It's really so understand. Amazing.
Evan, please, we have not introduced you yet. Please wait.
Okay, no, that's fine. I thought I could contribute to the curling conversation, but go on.
Why don't we bring in to a person who wants to communicate on curling, and that's Evan Peterson. Evan, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Ben. I wish somebody would have asked me. I would have told you that Canada was going to win mixed doubles. I mean, they were just the best. I've watched a ton of curling for some odd reason. But yeah, we're missing snowboarding tonight to talk about second base. So that seems like a great trade-off.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that you told me Canada was going to win curling because I put $1,000 down on that.
Hey, I've never steered you wrong, Ben.
That's not true. You told me to go and bet on the Atlanta Falcons last year in the Super Bowl, and look how that turned out.
Oh, low blow.
Wow.
Low blow.
Evan, it's always good to have you here. You know, you mess with me, I mess with you. It's all in good fun, bud. It's all in good fun.
A little give, a little take. It's what the people like.
Exactly. It's what the people like. Ray, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at Ray_Kuhn_28.
And what about you, Evan?
At EvFWFB.
And I can be reached at BBrennisFWFB. Why don't we jump right in? We're going to be talking about second base. We're going to be going through our tiers as we have been through the first two positions of catcher and first base. So if you have not caught those, go back and give those a listen. Everyone in the entire world probably has Jose Altuve in their first tier, and I would guess a lot of people probably have him as the only player in the first tier. What makes Jose Altuve possibly the fantasy MVP, Evan?
I mean, he's just five categories of greatness. And that's, I think, if you're looking for a guy to check all the boxes in the first round, Jose Altuve is going to do it across the board. He's going to do it at second base, which is a position where, you know, as we talk, you're going to find out that it thins out a little quickly and there's not really, you know, fantastic talent littered all the way along. But Altuve's been a model of consistency, and I mean, I can't get down with him as a number one overall pick. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I mean, 2-3, I don't think you can really go wrong there.
What about you, Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still taking Trout first, but I totally understand why people are going to make the case for Altuve going first. I mean, the fact that he's going to hit for a 330, 340 batting average, consistently get 200 hits. He's going to steal 30 bases easy. The runs scored aren't going to be a problem in that lineup. He's going to throw in minimum 20 homers, driving a bunch of runs. You have, obviously, the position scarcity. Second base isn't. I mean, the thing with second base is deep, as you'll see, but there's not very many guys that really stand out from the pack. So the fact that Altuve, even though he's clearly the shortest guy at the position, does stand out. It does make a difference. And, I mean, there's nothing in his toolbox, nothing in the metrics that says, all right, yeah, this guy's going to slow down or this guy's going to take a dip.
Yeah, I mean, he has improved in something every single year. You know you're going to get a consistent average from him. You're going to get stolen bases. You've come to the expectation that you're going to have some pop out of his bat over the last couple of years even. And you're going to get someone who's able to contribute a ton of runs and a ton of RBIs playing in the Astros lineup. My guess would be that most everyone has him as either a number one or number two pick. If he falls past that, I can't imagine how. The only potential explanation could be that it's a points league and someone goes and takes a pitcher as one of the first two picks. But outside that, I can't imagine that he ever falls outside those top two picks.
yeah, I haven't seen anything yet for him to do that. I mean, the thing you mentioned about him improving every year, that all of a sudden the last 2 years, home run to fly ball rate, 13% 2016, then 15% last year. Fly balls are consistent. I mean, I think him making that change is what really jumped him up into that top of the first round.
Yeah, I agree. Why don't we move into the second tier? All three of us have Jose Ramirez along with Brian Dozier, and both Ray and Evan have D. Gordon as well. So, Ray, what makes you say that D. Gordon is a second-tier type player? Is it the stolen bases only, or is there, does he bring other things to the table that you really like out of a second baseman?
I mean, to me, he's really a three-category player. You got, obviously, steals goes without saying. You're going to get close to a 300 batting average, and you're going to get 100 runs. So he's contributing three to the five categories. And really, if you ask me, you have Altuve, like we said, class of his own. You have Jose Ramirez, who I have in this tier, who's maybe you can call him Altuve light. Then you have Dozier, who brings the power, but then you knock down on the batting average. But he's still elite at the position for the power. Gordon is elite not only at the position, but in the league as far as stolen bases. And then after that, as you get to the third tier and below, everybody is kind of missing something or they're more league average. So you don't really have anybody standing out from the pack. So that's why I included Gordon. I mean, I usually never end up with Gordon on my team just because the ADP is too high for my liking, because I like to secure power in the first five rounds. But depending on the way you're going to construct your team, I can totally see making a case to get Gordon in a 60 stolen basis.
What about you, Evan?
Yeah, I mean, Ray, you know, kind of hit the bases as he went around on everything. I just think that 60 stolen bases, you know, is going to drive you, even if it's not bringing in power. The batting average is what everybody's looking for, because everybody's going to be taking these late round albatrosses that are going to end up tanking your batting average. Like, why wouldn't you just go into a draft and kind of go in with a game plan of I'm going to draft D. Gordon, and then I'm going to draft like a Joey Gallo a little bit later. And then I kind of have, you know, across the two guys, I have, you know, somebody who's going to hit, you know, two guys, if I essentially split them into two, is going to hit about 260-ish, 20 home runs, 25 home runs with about 30 steals. And I think that's kind of what you're going to want. And I think it's a great way to kind of distribute the risk of Gordon not carrying you in four categories. I'm more interested in what Ray said about Jose Ramirez light. So, Ben, I'll let you finish up on Gordon before we move there.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it's not that I don't like D. Gordon. It's just that I don't value him as highly as some of the other second basemen. I just think that while he doesn't bring enough to the table in terms of home runs and RBIs, if for some reason he doesn't hit well and doesn't get on base and the steals drop and the runs drop, and I feel it's tough for me to tie myself to a player that's just able to get on base and then has to score and has to get steals as a result for him to drive his fantasy value. But I will let Ray take it over from here with the Jose Ramirez light.
You mean Jose Ramirez being Jose Altuve light?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you're getting the home runs. Probably home runs, he's probably going to be close to Altuve. Probably getting 10 less stolen bases, 10 to 15 less runs, maybe 15 to 20 points less on the batting average, but it's the same idea of a very well-balanced player.
See, I'm really worried about home run regression for Jose Ramirez. And, I mean, I think the projection systems are kind of taking it into account. But I think even, like, a 23 or 24 number that I'm looking at, Steamer and Depth Charts, they have them at 21 and 22. Like, I would probably put money on him hitting less than 20 home runs. It was some weird stuff with his home run to fly ball rate against right-handed pitching, which is where he does all of his damage offensively. I don't necessarily know that it's sustainable for him to keep up a, you know, 14% home run to fly ball rate against them when he's had, you know, like a less than 6% in the past. And he didn't, you know, crank up the hard contact percentage against them at all, really. I mean, it was less than 33%. It's nothing, you know, eye-dropping or eye-opening, jaw-dropping, however that works out. I could not take Jose Ramirez with a second-round pick. I know that's where you're going to have to draft him. I just don't think I could do it because I do see some regression kind of coming on in. And I think it's easy to say for a guy that, you know, seemingly came out of nowhere on most people to say, you know, regression. But I may be alone in that boat.
Yeah, for me, I like Jose Ramirez. I mean, he's my second-ranked second baseman. And even if he does have a little bit of a regression, I think that he's still in such a good lineup that he's still going to be able to produce all the categories. And, you know, if he hits 17 home runs and still has 80-plus RBIs runs and 20-plus steals, which should be pretty easy for him to be able to accumulate, if he hits that 300-plus average, he's still going to be a very good player for you. And I still think that he is someone who would finish as a top-five second baseman. The consistency that you're getting from second base is what you're paying for, especially because there are injury-prone players. There are players who have only done it for a year, you know, like a Jonathan Scope. We don't know if he's going to be able to repeat the same thing that he did exactly last year. We expect him to, but we can't bank on it. You know, players like Ian Kinsler and Robbie Cano have had age catch up to them, and Jose Ramirez is someone that you expect to be able to give you that top five fantasy value and you're willing to pay up for it.
Okay. Well, can I just kind of build a little scenario for you? And this kind of goes into what we've kind of been talking about as far as trading off statistics between guys or whatnot. So let's say I build you a world where Jose Ramirez only hits 20 home runs and he steals about, you know, 17 bases, what he did last year. But he's got a 300 batting average. Would you really take, like, is the difference in the batting average so much different than a Brian Dozier who could hit you 20 more home runs, steal you maybe, you know, five less bases, but do the extra 20 home runs make up for what the batting average is going to hurt you, do you think? Does that make any sense, what I just said?
It does. Right, you want to take this?
I'm going to let you take it first, and then I'll come back after that.
Personally, I understand that Dozier could hit the 20 more home runs, and there could be a pretty big discrepancy in what they are able to do in terms of and in terms of average. But I do think that you get a more consistent player in Jose Ramirez. I understand that Dozier's been able to do it the last couple of years, and he's always been a consistent player, and that's why I still have him as a my third-ranked second baseman. But at the same point in time, he's had great second halves the last 2 years that if for some reason he has, you know, let's say an average second half, can we really expect it to really be a difference of 20 home runs? What if it's it could easily drop down to a difference of 6 home runs for all we know. And yeah, that's where my difference comes in. I expect Jose Ramirez to be consistent everywhere and maybe take a slight regression in power. I don't really know what I'm going to be able to get from Dozier in terms of power, if he's going to be able to hit 40 or if he hits 26.
Yeah, I mean, I think both guys are going to have regression in the power. So, I mean, Dozier hit, what, 42 last year? So if we're going to drop him down to, say, 35 to 37, Ramirez hit the 29, we drop him to 20 to 22. I mean, yeah, obviously, Dozier's going to have more home runs than Ramirez, but Ramirez is going to have the higher batting average by even, say, 30, you know, even 25 to 30 points, I think still makes a difference. He's going to end up with a few more steals. Everything else should be equal. So, I mean, it really depends the price that you want to pay on the batting average. Again, I do like Ramirez more than Dozier, but based on the price, I'm not sure that Ramirez is worth a second-round pick to me either.
And that's where I was kind of going with it. And I think, you know, Dozier is kind of tied to his pole ball. If you see that as far as his power, I think he's figured that out. And I think as far as, you know, a solid bet to hit 30 home runs, I think Dozier kind of is what he is in that department. I don't really see him hitting less than 30. The steals, I mean, 18 and 16 the past 2 years. The batting average, 268 and 271. So he hasn't proven to be a complete liability there. So, I mean, these are the decisions that you have to make in, you know, the second and the third round. Am I going to go Jose Ramirez? Well, if I go Jose Ramirez, I'm probably not going to go Brian Dozier, you know, anything like that. So Ramirez just isn't fitting into my draft plans, is maybe what I should have said when we were discussing him before.
Yeah, that I can definitely get behind.
For me, the likelihood that I end up with any of my top three second basemen is pretty unlikely, just for the fact that as much as I don't like second baseman, there's still players who I like who I'll take, you know, like a Cano or someone who other people may not be as high on, that I'll be able to take them a little bit later. And as a result, if I have to plug and play someone like Marwin Gonzalez or Chris Owings, I'll live with that rather than go and use one of my earlier picks on someone like second base. So the likelihood that they end up in my draft plans are very slim. I just have them this highly ranked.
Just while we're dancing around in this tier, I want to throw one other thing as I was kind of contemplating a little bit of draft strategy. Do you think it's wasting D. Gordon's value or whatever if, say, you drafted him, like, you're in a 14-team league and you draft him, you know, end of the second round, and then third round you come back and you draft like a Dozier, and then you play Gordon in the outfield when he gets eligibility in Seattle?
Maybe a little bit, but I mean, at the same time, what's Billy Hamilton's ADP? So, I mean, at that point, I mean, it's not like Hamilton's going kind of early too, so then you're going to compare Gordon and Hamilton, and Gordon's a better player than Hamilton. So I don't think it's super crazy.
I don't think it's super crazy. It's just if I'm going to have players in my outfield, the likelihood that I have my first outfielder as a speed and stolen base guy, it's very unlikely. I typically like to try to get someone who has potential 30 home run power with 100 RBIs and, you know, a 300 average. That's what I tried to acquire as my first outfielder, just so I have some consistency out there.
But once again, like, you play the game where you add up the statistics and you split the two. So you draft Dozier and D. Gordon and you break them in two. Don't you kind of have like two Andrew Benintendi's, Christian Yelich type players that are going to hit, you know, overall for your averages, let's say 280 and be generous, and, you know, say Dozier doesn't completely tank you, but, you know, then you have 20 home runs and, you know, 30 steals across it. I mean,
you could have someone like that, but at the same point in time, look how many other outfielders there are that can contribute both stolen bases and power. I mean, you still have a player like Trout, Blackman, Mookie Betts, just to name a couple of the top people.
Yeah, but those guys are going to be gone. I'm saying at this point, like, you're building those in. Like, you look at what a Mookie Betts is going to do for your team as far as, like, being a 25-25 guy, getting you a ton of, I mean, Gordon's not going to get you a ton of RBIs, but the run and the RBI should kind of offset with what Dozier is going to provide you in the Twins lineup. And then what, as far as the batting average, it just kind of like goes out. Like, if I gave you an outfielder of those split between the two guys, and we need to wrap this up because this is going on entirely too long, I'm saying, where would he go in drafts? He'd probably be out, you know, second round pick, end of the second round. So just build a team that way.
But then the problem I have with that is, I mean, this isn't about second base, more about team construction, is who would you rather have, Dozier or like a Yelich or Benintendi? Just straight up, who would you rather have?
I'm sorry, I'm kind of like babbling all over myself. I think I like Dozier as a hitter. I mean,
So all things considered, not taking into account position, you're rather Dozier than Yelich or Benintendi.
I mean, I may end up regretting this later when I actually sit back and go over the statistics, but yeah, I think so.
Because that's kind of what you're doing if you're going to take both of them and then throw Gordon into your outfield, just based on round value and ADP.
No, I get what you're saying. And maybe it's, like I said, I have these Scooby thoughts and I get hung up on them and I need to sit down and actually hammer them out. But it was just something I wanted to bounce off you guys.
Why don't we move into the third tier? And for me, I have D. Gordon in this tier, but we all have Daniel Murphy. We all have Jonathan Scope. We all have Robinson Cano. Evan also has Ozzie Albies, and Ray has Whit Merrifield. So, Evan, we will start with you. Is the Albies being in the third tier just because you're a Braves fan, or do you have something to be able to back this up for him being this high for you?
I mean, part of it's being the Braves fan and trolling you, and part of it is that, you know, I'm as hyped as pretty much everybody else in the industry kind of seems to be on the Ozman right now. There was an interview where he said his goals this year were to collect 200 hits and to steal 40 bases, which, I mean, dream on, man. I'm all behind it, and I'd love to see it. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. The best, and I'm totally going to give credit here because it was the best Ozzie bit I saw all offseason. Mike Petriello tweeted this out. So at 20, he had a 112 WRC plus and 244 plate appearances. There's a list of a short list of guys to do that in the past 30 years. Once again, 110 WRC plus or above, 240 plate appearances and 20 years or younger. It was Rafael Devers, Carlos Correa, Bryce Harper two times, Mike Trout, Jason Hayward, Giancarlo Stanton, A-Rod, and Ken Griffey Jr. That's a pretty good list to be on. And I think Albies is going to hit really high in the order. I think he's might hit second. It might be, you know, the Dansby Swanson scenario all over again, that he, you know, might go through some struggles, but I am buying into the helium on Ozzie, and I love trolling you, so it's a win-win.
So what I got from that helium is that Albies is going to end up like Jason Hayward.
That's man. That's an even lower blow than the Falcons Super Bowl thing at the beginning of the show. But, yeah, Hayward's somebody else's problem. And, I mean, yeah, the hype is pretty much the same as when Jay Hay came up. But hopefully we don't have to deal with all the injury shit. What do you guys think about?
All kidding aside, from a fantasy perspective, I like Albies better than Hayward. And I've actually been moving Albies up a little bit the closer I look at him and the more prep I do. And, I mean, the thing for me with Albies is, I mean, obviously, like, he's saying all the right things, but I think at a minimum, we're looking at a 10-homer, 20-stolen-base season from him, probably 15-20, and then there's upside for more. I mean, he has the power. Yeah, at least he has some power metrics, and, I mean, he's still young, so he's going to continue to grow. He's going to continue to grow into that power. And as he learns to put more of an undercut on the ball, with the launch angle, I think he'll end up being a 20-homer hitter. The speed is legit. He makes solid contact. So, I mean, to me, there's a lot to like about Albies. He's not going to be a complete liability on the batting average. And, I mean, he's one of the few guys, as we get further down here, that's going to offer you some true upside. So I'm in on Albies. Not super, super hold the phone in, but I'm in on him.
I like Albies. I mean, I'm not going to be as high as Evan just because I'm not insane. But at the same point in time, I still view him as a, you know, anything over 10 teams, I view him as a startable second baseman. And even if he's on the lower end, I still think that he's going to be able to give you some good stats. And he's someone who I would consider a quote-unquote sleeper in terms of a standard league. He's going to be someone who I would, if I miss out on those top couple guys, he's going to be someone I'm willing to wait on to get.
You want Freddie Freeman to perform his high second-round draft value, then you want Ozzie to hit second, and you want him to be on base all the time. And that's what you should be rooting for, and I think that's what we all should be rooting for. The other thing, did you see the video of him pushing his car as like a workout down the alley? It's pretty interesting.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he's got, I don't know, it kind of looks like a Lexus from behind. I'm real bad with that kind of stuff, which is weird because I work with cars. But yeah, go check it out. Little behind the scenes Braves fan.
So now we're going to go behind the scenes on this podcast to show that same workout. Would we have to get Ben like a Matchbox car?
Yes, absolutely. Or maybe like one of those, my son's got one. It's about, 2.5 feet tall, and it actually has a battery and shit that you can plug in. Looks like a little monster truck.
Yeah, sounds right.
You'll see them on, Twitter when girls in college get DUIs and they'll be driving around in them for fun and stuff. Like, that's going to be what Ben's pushing around.
Well, Ray, we really appreciate you being on the show, so.
It was nice knowing you. We're going to have to change the name of the show, but thanks anyway. Ray, what are your thoughts on Merrifield? Because you have him in your third tier, both Evan and I have him in our fourth. So what pushes him up for you?
I think the 30 stolen base potential is what does it for me with Merrifield. I'm not expecting crazy home run totals. I'm not expecting a 300 batting average. He's going to end up with some runs, some RBIs. I mean, there's not really much in Kansas City's lineup. Maybe they still end up bringing Moustakas or Hosmer back. But regardless, he's going to be batting towards the top / the middle of whatever the kind of lineup they actually do put out there. But, I mean, to me, he has an elite contact percentage, so he's going to put the bat on the ball. He doesn't hit too much in the air, so expecting more than 15 home runs I think is going to be a little foolish. But like I said, the 30 stolen base potential and the fact that it's pretty realistic is what nudges him up into that third tier for me.
What about you, Evan? What are your thoughts on Merrifield?
I just think there's kind of regression flags all over the place. The Royals in general are going to kind of suck. I definitely don't believe that. Seamer and depth charts have him at 12 home runs. I would struggle to put him at a number higher than that. They have him at 23 to 25 home runs, which, okay, if he gets, 600 plate appearances, sounds about right. But, if he misses, any time or is injured or, has anything that slows him down, that's going to, bite into that. Merrifield is not somebody who's in my draft plans. And if he wants me to draft him, then he's going to have to show me this again. So,
as I talked about when I did one of my many, many, many team previews and I covered the Royals, I like Merrifield. The problem is when he's one of only two potential stable lineup guys, it's tough for me to really go and give him full support. And while I'll rank him high, the likelihood that I end up taking him is pretty slim. I do like him for being able to have some power and speed. I just, honestly, I can't really bank on him being on my team with the lack of protection in the lineup behind him outside of Sal Perez. If they consider bringing back someone like a Hosmer or Moustakas potentially, it could change my thought. But as of right now, I can't really attack him. What about players like Daniel Murphy, Jonathan Scope, and Robinson Cano? Are these players that are just consistent year in and year out for you, Ray, that you're willing to take them if they fall to you? Or is this someone that you'll rank here, but the likelihood that you get them is pretty slim?
Yeah, I'm willing to take all three of the three. Scope is going to be the one higher on my list just because he's the youngest and he has the most power potential. Overall, Murphy's the better hitter. The best hitter of the three. We just have to be careful that the knee injury is okay, that he can go through normal spring training and he's ready to start the year. I mean, Murphy, you're really not going to get much more than 20 home runs, and at this point in his career, I wouldn't expect much more than that from Cano either, but Murphy's one of the better hitters for average in the game. He's going to get a bunch of RBIs hitting in that strong Washington lineup, and Cano, you can kind of, as long as you don't expect much more than 20 to 25 homers, you're going to have a solid option. None of these three guys are going to run. Scope has the 30 home run potential. I think he can get there again this year. So, of the three, maybe I'm going to look a little harder at Scope just because I feel like there's a little more room for a benefit compared to the ADP. But of the three, Murphy's probably the best hitter. What do you guys think?
Yeah, what about you, Evan?
As far as best overall hitter, yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I am worried about as far as, how the knee injury is coming along, what his actual availability is going to be come opening day. So that may push him down, a little bit as far as the ranks. That's definitely why he's got a low pick of 140 for NFBC ADP, which I think is absolutely insane. And I don't think most people, you know, should even remotely expect to get him at even half that, probably. But all of these guys kind of are the same thing. They're going to hit you somewhere around 20 to 25 home runs. And Scope definitely has the upside for more, as Ray pointed out. They all kind of have the potential for higher batting averages. Murphy is the one. If you told me one was going to hit 300, probably be Daniel Murphy. I really like what Scope did as far as developing an eye on stuff outside of the zone. He swung at a career low of pitches outside. And I'm kind of worried about what's going on in Baltimore. There seems to be a lot of discourse. And if, like, say they were to, you know, send Scope packing in a trade or something like that, what his power potential may look like in other places might be something of interest. But I do agree that he's probably the one, just because of the boost in home runs and doesn't have the injury stuff, he'd be the one I'd look to draft first.
Yeah, for me, I like all of these guys. And, you know, obviously they all come with their own problems. Cano and Murphy both have injury histories, but when they're on the field, they're a very consistent player. And, you know, you've seen Murphy adapt over the last couple of years and hit more power, and being in the Washington lineup is a great spot for him. He just needs to be able to be healthy. Scope is still the player that I like, even though I can't expect him to be able to necessarily do what he did last year, and like Evan was saying on the Discord in Baltimore, makes it a little up in the air. The likelihood that I end up with one of these guys is greater than me ending up with, you know, a Tozier or a Ramirez or an Altuve, but the likelihood that I go and take one of these guys at where their value is pretty slim. I'm probably hoping that they fall a little bit to me, and if they don't, then I'm willing to pass and go for someone like an Albies or an Owings or, you know, even a Eduardo Nunez or Marwin Gonzalez if those players are still there a couple rounds later. So,
and now, a message from our sponsor.
If you like betting, I have a deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all of his info for free. There is no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all of the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie /or XBet with the $45 deposit, and you will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on the $45 deposit.
While we move into the next tier, both Evan and I have Whit Merrifield in our fourth tier. All of us have Ian Kinsler. Ray and I have Albies. All of us have DJ LeMahieu. We have Javier Baez. And I have Chris Owings. Evan has Ian Happ. And I have Chris Taylor and Eduardo Nunez as well. So we will go over and start with talking about Ian Kinsler, who is now on the Angels. What do we expect from him this year, Ray? Being able to potentially bat the top of the lineup with other good players around him.
I'm expecting a rebound from Kinsler. I mean, his BABIP last year was .244, career average .286. So we're going to look for a rebound there. I mean, yeah, I know he's 36 years old, but to me, he hasn't really necessarily shown too much of a decline. I mean, he's obviously not the same player he was in his prime, but he's still a serviceable player. And in last year, even though he struggled with the batting average, I think the BABIP was a lot to blame. The contact is still there at an elite level. The hard contact power metrics show that he's still there. He's still maybe 75% of what he was when he was on Texas. So all isn't lost on Kinsler. The ISO did drop, but it's more in line with his career average. So I'm not pressing the panic button, and honestly just the opposite. I think he's a decent value if you kind of wait till the end of the starting second baseman. You're one of the last teams to get a starting second baseman. Kinsler can be a good acquisition for you.
And what about you, Evan? What do you think of Ian Kinsler?
I think the batting average drop probably had to do with the uptick in fly balls he was hitting off of right-handers. And while they were, you know, leaving the park and they were, you know, contributing to his overall home run totals, I think it probably had a huge hand in bringing his batting average down. And there could be a little bit of bounce back to it. I don't see how it could stumble really too low from the exact numbers that I'm looking at. He's going to be, you know, backed up by a lot of solid talent in the Angels lineup. And I'm not thinking injury with him anymore. I think that's a very interesting thing, that it seems to be this tag that we just, you know, forgot about, kind of like Nelson Cruz. Oh, okay. He's not injury prone anymore, even though he was just dogged on it, you know, pretty much, you know, 4 years ago or whatever it was. But I like Kinsler. The problem is, I think that a lot of other people like Kinsler too. And I feel that he is going to start sliding up boards if people start, you know, reaching and they're like, oh yeah, Mike Trout's really good. He's going to hit in front of Mike Trout. Let's draft Ian Kinsler. It might suck a little bit of the value out of him, but I do like him as an overall play for the year.
Yeah. I like Kinsler just because he's going to be someone who can still get some on bases, have some pop, and should be able to still have some decent run numbers. If he can improve on that average last year that he had, which was a pretty low average, and injuries and the team around him obviously influenced that, but if he can bring that average back up to normal Ian Kinsler numbers, I think he'll be a bargain for second baseman. What about a player like DJ LeMay, who was just a batting, who had such a great batting average a couple years ago, and last year didn't repeat the season that he had 2 years ago? What can we expect from him, Evan?
I mean, LeMahieu is going to give you the batting average band-aid, you know, after pick 100 or whatever, because I think a lot of people are kind of discarding LeMahieu. Obviously, you know, the 348's a huge outlier for him, as is the 23 stolen bases, which I think people probably wish that he would get back a little bit more in. I forget exactly where I saw it. It was out on Twitter. Sorry. They were saying that Colorado's been like a top whatever, you know, top 7-8 scoring offense each of the past 3 years. So his ability to, you know, stack on the runs is obviously going to continue in an environment like this. But, you know, if he hits you double-digit home runs, you're doing cartwheels. I think the batting average band-aid is, you know, kind of the biggest thing floating his value here.
And yeah, I mean, you're right about that, the batting average. I mean, I'm not sure that we're ever going to see what it was 2 years ago. His BABIP still kind of concerns me, and he's not running as much. I think he had 5% stolen base opportunity last year, so that's definitely concerning. So, I mean, the runs are going to be there because of the lineup and because it's Colorado. Batting average, you obviously get one of the top batting averages in the league, but I think for me it comes down to team build, whether you're looking for more power or you're looking for the batting average. And I mean, personally, with all the power going on out there, I'm not sure I can sacrifice just to get 8 to 10 home runs from him when you have someone like Odor, who had a bad year, had a terrible year, and can still hit 30 home runs. And I mean, in Kinsler, power slipping, he's still going to get 20. So, I mean, I'm not sure that LeMahieu's going to be the guy to target based on the power numbers that you need to really be competitive anymore. But he is good at those two categories.
Yeah, I think for me, getting someone like LeMahieu as a middle infielder type player in a standard league or in a shallower league is something what I would try to target him, but the likelihood that I grab him in a medium-sized league is less likely just because the lack of power and everything like we were saying. Why don't we move into the Cubs and talk a little bit about both Ian Happ and Javi Baez. What can we potentially expect from those two players this year, Ray?
All right, I have Baez slightly ahead of Happ in my rankings. The thing for Baez is I feel like he should be a 30 home run hitter, but I'm still not seeing enough out of him to expect much more than 20 home runs for him. I mean, But the bottom line is he really just hits too many ground balls. It wouldn't surprise me to see him continue the uptick we saw in the home run to fly ball rate from him last year. It's really just going to be how conscious he is about that launch angle and whether or not – I mean, we'll probably get a good look in spring training if he took some steps to improve that. And if that launch angle changed, then maybe we are looking more at that 30 home run hitter. But regardless, he's going to get 20. He's going to get a bunch of RBIs. He's going to steal 10 to 15 bases. And even though he strikes out a ton, the batting average isn't going to be too bad. So, I mean, for me, that's why I have Baez at a Hap. Hap, it's kind of the same situation. They're kind of clones to a point, except Hap's not going to hit for as strong of a batting average, and he's not going to run as much. However, the minors have to show the ability to hit for high average, so maybe that'll just come with experience. But, I mean, either way, these are two guys both worth targeting.
What about you, Evan?
I mean, we kind of talked about this when we did the Cubs preview here. Hap, you know, came in and he smacked a lot of home runs. He's got the same kind of batting eye issues that Javi Baez is. It's just that Baez is, his batting average doesn't necessarily reflect literally how much he swings and misses. I agree that if, you know, once again, you tell me one of these guys goes off and pops 30 home runs, it's probably Baez. But I think, didn't we look at this? I don't know if he's still got options to go down. I just think there's a lot more room for the floor to drop out. And maybe it's because, you know, Baez's detractors have been, you know, yelling a lot louder and for a lot longer than, you know, anybody that's trying to talk down on Hap, which doesn't seem to be a ton of people in the fantasy community. It sounds like, you know, most people are aboard Hap, you know, the madman that is Joe Madden and, you know, shifting people around, that he's going to find the time on the diamond. He's like Tommy La Stella. If Tommy La Stella could hit home runs, you know, he's an athletic dude. But I would probably take Hap over Baez, and that's probably just because I'm a hater. I could be wrong on that one.
Yeah, for me, I like Baez more than I like Hap, but I do like what Hap's able to bring to the table, and I like the power-speed combo blend that Javi Baez is able to bring. It's just a strikeout rate that I want to see come down a little bit, but I do have confidence that Javi Baez could be a 30 home run hitter, and, you know, even more so now that we're playing in a league where all the balls are juice and you have someone like a Elvis Andrews who goes and hits 20 home runs, basically. And, you know, when you have players that are able to go and hit a lot more home runs, you don't necessarily need to care as much about the contact rate and everything, but it would be nice to see him be able to have a good average, be able to use that speed, and be able to cut down on that strikeout rate, because he could be a pretty special player if he's able to do that.
Yeah, well, the one thing about Baez is, you know, even though he does have a ton of swing and miss, he takes a ton of cuts. He had the fifth highest swing percentage in the majors last year. So, I mean, he's still going to be, you know, swinging for the fences for you, which, you know, could, you know, lead you to some streaks that could be pretty unbearable, but could also lead to some very interesting things as well.
Why don't we move into the last tier, and let's each pick a player that we're really expecting to be able to have a pretty good season this year. So I will let Evan start, and Evan, pick anyone from the fifth tier that you really, really like.
Okay, do I have to like them? Why don't we talk about Chris Taylor and why, I apparently need to buy another drink for whoever drafted him at 37 in the NFBC. That's too high even for me. I am not even really in with the Chris Taylor inside, like, pick 100 necessarily. I'm just overall down on him, and I see just all kinds of ways he's coming back. Ben, you love the Chris Taylor, don't you?
Kinda.
Defend your boy.
He's not my boy.
Come get your boy.
Certainly not my boy, I'll tell you that.
Okay, Ray, so you're on Chris Taylor hater island with me?
Oh, I'm right there with you.
Okay, tell me, I mean, how many home runs do you think he'll hit this year? Give me an over-under.
Let's say 15.
Under. That was, wait, yeah, I was expecting you to go a little lower than that. Ben?
Under.
Yeah.
I expect him to have under. I just have him in my fourth tier just because if he's able to replicate anything that he had last year, he would be a pretty good get in terms of where you may be able to get him in terms of the draft value. But at the same point in time, he's someone that, while I'll rank him high enough, he's not someone who I'm actually touching in draft boards.
That makes no sense.
How does it make no sense?
Wait, so you're saying you're going to rank him high, but you're not going to touch him on your draft board?
But no. You don't believe it?
It's not that. It's the likelihood that for me to take someone at second base, which is a position that I don't necessarily have a lot of value in terms of where I want to be. How I do my draft construction is typically there's certain positions which I try to focus on first. Second baseman is not one of those. And the likelihood that where I have him ranked overall in my ADP is similar to where he'll go, but the likelihood that I want to pull a trigger on a second baseman at that point is still pretty slim because there's other players around at that value that I will like significantly more for other positions.
Oh, I have him ranked as my 19th second baseman, so he's definitely going. So he's definitely going up.
I don't have him ranked that low. I have him as a top 12 second baseman for myself.
Yeah, I can't do it.
I can't.
But I mean, the thing that's funny with the over-under that I said at 15 home runs and we all went under, is he hit 21 last year. So, I mean, we're really not believing much in Taylor at all.
How many had he hit in the majors before that?
No, I agree. It wasn't many. I don't think it was 21.
I think it was one. or maybe I was looking at some splits here. I just see all kinds of stuff. And, I mean, he could get a decent spot in the lineup, but I mean, this is a guy that, you know, probably wouldn't have had a job if Andrew Tolles was healthy all year. And so, I mean, it's nice that he came out and, you know, hit 20 home runs and stole you 17 bags. But I couldn't do it. I don't even know. Ben, what do you think as far as like a 265 batting average over or under? Do you think the 288 is repeatable?
Yes. I think it's more repeatable than him hitting that type of power. I could see him hitting a 273 average this year.
He had a 361 BABIP.
That's what I was just going to point out.
Yeah, but we've seen other players that have had high BABIP. It's not like it's impossible for him to be able to continue to have a high BABIP.
Don't you think his batting average might have been floated by, I don't know, the balls going over the fence? That was a period there, or question mark, whatever.
I thought home run didn't influence BABIP.
I'm not talking about BABIP. I'm talking about batting average. Well, and I mean, his BABIP too. Okay, so his BABIP goes down, and then if the home runs aren't clearing the fence, then, you know, that's coming down too. There's even more risk built into his batting average.
Why do you always have to attack me, Evan?
I'm not attacking you. I'm attacking your logic, which is way more fun.
That you liked out of this tier, and all of a sudden you just go and try to attack me. And me putting Chris Taylor as a top 12 second baseman just because you don't like him.
I liked to have this conversation. That's why I picked him. I didn't know that I had to like the player, Ben.
Yes, I would like you to pick someone that you think is going to have decent draft value in your fifth tier.
Scooter Gennett, if they don't platoon him halfway through the season, we'll go there.
What about you, Ray? Is there someone in your fifth tier that you're excited about?
I'm going to say Rougned Odor. I mean, the guy is going to hit 30 home runs. I mean, he's still not a perfect pitcher. His contact dropped from 83% two years ago to 73% last year. But, I mean, he did have a 224 BABIP. He's going to get you some stolen bases. So, I mean, I like the 30 home run, 15 stolen base potential. And I think the batting average is going to come up to 250. I think some people are going to be scared off by him. So I'm looking at Odor. And then I'm going to just throw one more out there is Jonathan Villar. He burned a ton of people last year. He still has trouble with the contact. But the Brewers are a much better lineup this year. Villar gets regular playing time, which right now he should, with Eric Sogard being his only competition. He's going to be able to run in Milwaukee. He's going to end up with 30 stolen bases. He does have a little bit of pop in there. Not too much. Decent enough batting average. So I think if you're looking to fill that middle infield, you know, decently late in drafts, and you want to get 30 stolen bases, Villar's your guy.
Yeah, I mean, I personally was going to say VR is one of my guys as well, because I would like to see some type of bounce back, and I think that if he has, you know, even 70% of what he had 2 years ago, that's a pretty good draft price steal, or draft day steal for you. Another player who I'm kind of banking on to do better is Jason Kipnis, because we've seen him do well in the past, and he's capable of being a top 10 second baseman. I think if you took a flyer on him and he was able to be similar to the player he was in the past when he's healthy, then that's another draft day steal.
Right. Do I get to? I don't get to talk about any of these guys. I just have to sit here and listen.
He's cutting you.
That's such crap. Fine. Rougned Odor. The reason I didn't say Rougned Odor is because Rougned Odor isn't in my fifth tier. Or maybe he is, and I have it wrong. But I think, you know, it's absolutely amazing that he was still able to hit 30 home runs, given, you know, the absolute dreadfulness that was his season against left-handed pitching. He still rocks right-handed pitching, so I'm not too worried about it. He still stole 15 bases. I think you have to look at his season as kind of like, it's weird to say it's a worst case scenario season at 30-15, but might be. And I didn't hear anything else other than the sound of you talking about Jason Kipnis and me banging my head against the wall, because the dude is never healthy. You never know what you're going to get as far as the batting average is concerned. And it's kind of a pin the tail on the home run and stolen base total, as well as his games played total. So I'm Ben, do me a favor. What exactly does it say on what tier I have Jason Kipnis in on this Google sheet?
It's a blank.
I believe it actually says he sucks, I hate him. And it may have said even more vulgar things in the past. So there may have been other names in there. Sorry if I do not provide my takes. But Ben never wanted to hear those anyway. So,
Evan, why don't you tell our listeners where you can be reached and what you're working on?
I am working on making your life a living hell on these podcasts. I am working on trying to build some kind of presence on Twitter, even though I really hate social media. You can find me at EvFWFB. Join me and make fun of Ben Brennus together.
What about you, Ray? Where can you be reaching? What are you working on?
I am at Ray_Kuhn_28 on Twitter. And I am just working on a bunch of fantasy baseball content, this podcast, and also some content over at Roto Professor.
And I can be reached at BBrandsFWFB. You can find me and Eric Mackey on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits basketball podcast twice a week. And you'll be able to find some of my written articles in our fantasy baseball draft guide that will be coming out. So from the rest of us from Friends with Fantasy Benefits, have a great baseball offseason, everyone.